evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. This program is recorded via remote and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 14, 2020. South Sudanese doctors say the coronavirus tests conducted in South Sudan are accurate.
I know there's a lot of talk in the public out there that somehow maybe the test is not correct or anything like that. Let me assure you, the same instrument, laboratory instrument that we are using in South Sudan, are the one being used in Uganda, Kenya, all over the world.
And 26 people were killed in tribal fighting in Sudan.
We have agreed to form a joint court martial that shall be announced soon. We need the entire Sudanese people to know about this process, and there is a need to maintain close monitoring.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. There is a myth among South Sudanese that their government is making up the coronavirus test results to get donations from the international community. South Sudanese health experts say the corona test results are accurate. A senior consultant at the National Public Health Laboratory, where coronavirus tests are conducted, says the testing kits in South Sudan are of international standards. Ding Magod reports for VOA from Juba.
Officials say coronavirus testing kits and the polymerase chain reaction or PCR machine are of international standards quality and produce accurate results, and that they follow WHO recommended standards in testing procedures before releasing results. Dr. Bior Kuer Bior is a senior consultant at the National Public Health Laboratory, the facility where coronavirus tests are conducted.
I know there's a lot of talk in the public out there that somehow maybe the test is not correct or anything like that. Let me assure you, the same instrument, laboratory instrument that we are using in South Sudan, are the one being used in Uganda, Kenya, all over the world. We are using the latest technology.
Dr. Bior says technicians working at the National Health Laboratory are qualified and experienced in conducting Ebola, influenza, and other viral diseases, including COVID-19 tests.
We do twice or three times, just to be sure. For those that have already tested positive and are going under case management, we keep testing them just to make sure that either virus is still in the system or had the body gotten rid of it. The individual that has been declared free were tested many times and were tested positive after they were isolated at the John Graham Infectious Disease Unit. So there's no question about the reliability of this test.
Dr. Richard Lako, a member of the Technical Secretariat of South Sudan's High-Level Task Force for COVID-19, says testing for the pandemic is centralized and results are released by the task force.
The results are only issued by the Public Health Authority. Even those alerts that will be declared positive to be reported in the high-level task force, it must originate from the lab. We have a team there that are responsible, and they issue that lab through the incident manager, and then they release the results.
36-year-old Juba resident Thomas Richard from Lemun Gaba says more people should consider getting tested to prevent the spread of the pandemic.
That test is very important. Every people should all go for that test so that to reduce the spread of corona to other people.
Dr. Bior says in order to obtain a sample for a coronavirus test, all that is needed is a swab inside the nose or mouth. A blood sample is not required. The only testing facility in the country is the Public Health Laboratory in Juba, but Dr. Bior says the health ministry plans to decentralize coronavirus testing to regional labs in Wau, Malakal, Ruweng, and the Nimule border crossing point on the South Sudan-Uganda border. Officials did not say when other locations across South Sudan would have testing facilities. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
With the number of COVID-19 infections rapidly rising in South Africa, and many foreign nationals facing a bleak future due to lockdown restrictions, Zimbabwean nationals have launched an initiative to cushion each other from the impact of the restrictions. The initiatives under the banner Zimbabweans United for Progress include technocrats, specialists in a number of fields, activists, politicians, lawyers, and others. Leaders of the initiatives have offered assurances that it will be kept nonpartisan and political. Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Kenneth Mandaza, the head of public relations for the group, says this is an initiative for and by Zimbabweans. He says they want to help thousands of Zimbabwean migrants directly affected by COVID-19.
The assistance we seek to provide will be distributed in the form of virtual vouchers for those who need food assistance. And in the case where we receive assistance or donations in the form of food parcels, they will also be distributed in that form to the people who need food assistance.
Mandaza says many have been out of work since a national lockdown began on the 26th of March. This has left them hungry and without money to buy basics or pay rent. Those who have been lucky to return to work when lockdown were eased are working half their normal shifts and struggling to make ends meet. Thousands of those working as waiters in restaurants and hotels still can't go back to work. Mandaza says his organization will approach donors, funders, banks, humanitarian organizations, and other sources of assistance.
For businesses, small businesses that have been affected by COVID-19, a revolving fund is being put in place to ensure that we support at least 5,000 of these small-scale businesses in resuscitating them, and this revolving fund will continue to build on until we produce something bigger for our country.
Zimbabweans have welcomed the initiative. Nakuto Mabena, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Community in South Africa NGO, says many Zimbabweans are already struggling to support themselves here and their families back home.
We know that the majority of our people work as construction workers, in restaurants, as domestic workers in the security sector. This time they are not at work, meaning they are not receiving any income, which means they are in need of food parcels.
However, Canisius Nkala, a member of ZAPU, one of the political parties in Zimbabwe, says they are concerned that a number of political parties and civil society organizations from the Matabeleland regions have not been invited.
If you are to talk inclusivity, we know each other. We have met as organizations. Each and every organization knows the leaders of each of the organizations that are there. So I wonder what criteria was used to select. And I would like to say that the idea was good, but it will never be successful, because to me, if they want that to be inclusive, let it be inclusive enough.
The Zimbabwean consulate in Johannesburg recently reported that close to 6,000 Zimbabweans have applied for assistance ranging from food handouts to voluntary repatriation. Thuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Truck drivers from across East Africa are stranded at the Uganda-Rwanda border. The drivers say the guidelines set by Rwanda's government to help control COVID-19 infection in the country are hard to pass. The drivers, who have endured days away from home, also decry stigma by communities that view them as COVID-19 positives who could spread the disease to them. Catherine Nambe reports for VOA from Kampala.
For 3 weeks, a traffic jam has been growing at the Uganda-Rwanda Mirama Hills border post as truck drivers from across the East African community, ESC, can't cross into Rwanda. With truck drivers seen as high-risk COVID-19 carriers, Rwanda has asked them to hand over their vehicles to Rwandan drivers in a system of relay driving. The other option is to offload merchandise onto Rwanda trucks. The drivers have refused, saying they have no authorization from their employers and could be held liable for any lost merchandise. Benjamin Ngugi is a trucker from Kenya.
But we, like drivers, we don't like that thing of handing the truck to the other drivers from Rwanda. So we're just requesting, if we can be allowed to proceed to Rwanda, it's okay.
As if the long wait is not enough, the truckers say they can't get medical attention, food or sanitary facilities from nearby communities due to stigma. Muhammad Ali is a trucker from Tanzania.
They are calling us Corona. We are not Corona. And we have all even certificate we have on the vehicle. But they still, they were calling us Corona. Why?
Ugandan authorities in the area occupied by truckers insist their presence poses a huge threat of coronavirus spread. Francis Mujuche is an area legislator.
They are gathering, they are becoming many. It has created jam, traffic jam. But also, they are interacting with the people who are serving them food. We don't know their status.
George Bakunda is the resident district commissioner of Untungamo district, where the truckers are parked. He says if Rwanda doesn't allow the truckers in quickly, they will be moved to gazetted parking areas.
These drivers are becoming a bit of a challenge for us to manage, because these are the people. Some of them, we are not sure of their corona status. If that issue cannot be solved within a short time from now, then we should go in and withdraw these trucks from that Mrama Hills border and locate them to designated parking area, exclusion areas which have been identified.
ESC heads of state, including Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, Paul Kagame of Rwanda, Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya, and Salva Kiir of South Sudan, agreed yesterday on double testing of truck drivers. They will only be allowed to drive through the ESC upon testing negative in their country of origin and at the border. They also agreed to adopt a harmonized system for the certification and sharing of COVID-19 test results and other information. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, weather experts warn about changes in the coming days. Find out why right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experience. Anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times: one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. China's sudden decision to ban Australian meat from four major suppliers is being seen as a retaliation for Canberra's push for a global investigation into the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. It is thought to have started at an animal market in the Chinese city of Wuhan late last year. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
China has indicated it will impose an 80% tariff on Australian barley exports. It has also banned red meat from four Australian suppliers that control more than a third of the country's exports to China. Opposition politicians and academics believe the move's a payback for Australia's call for an international inquiry into the COVID-19 crisis. Last month, China's ambassador to Australia threatened a consumer backlash against Australian exports because of Canberra's attempt to garner global support for a probe into the origins of the new coronavirus. But authorities in Beijing this week asserted that Australian agricultural exporters have violated quarantine regulations as well as other health and labelling issues. Australian Trade Minister Simon Birmingham also believes the suspension of meat exports is not linked to the call for a COVID-19 investigation.
Chinese officials, both publicly and privately, are adamant that these are unconnected, and so it's in the best interests of our farmers and exporters for us to treat these issues all on their merits, and certainly from our policy perspective, these are completely unconnected issues. Quite transparently, an investigation around the handling of COVID-19 has no relationship whatsoever to Australian exports of beef or barley.
While supporting a call for a COVID-19 investigation, opposition politicians in Australia believe the government has mismanaged its relationship with China, its biggest trading partner. There is a feeling that Canberra should have quietly sought backing for any global inquiry rather than antagonising China with public pronouncements. Australia's three main export industries, mining, tourism and education, have been dominated by the Chinese. Beijing criticised Australia for banning all flights from mainland China at the start of February in response to the growing coronavirus threat. The bilateral relationship was under strain well before then, over allegations of Chinese meddling in Australia's domestic politics and claims of cyber espionage and theft. There are fears that a trade war over the origins of COVID-19 could damage Australian agriculture at a time when parts of the economy have collapsed because of the pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
At least 26 people, including security forces and civilians, were killed and dozens of others wounded when armed men attacked the rapid support forces in Kardukle, southern Kordofan state. Sudanese military officials have airlifted the wounded to Khartoum for treatment. The deputy chairman of Sudan's Sovereign Council and leader of the paramilitary group says the attacks were politically motivated. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Local authorities in Kadugli town of South Kordofan state say a base belonging to the Rapid Support Forces or RSF located outside Kadugli town came under attack by armed men in military uniform on Monday. The military caretaker governor of South Kordofan state, Major General Rashid Abdulhamid Ismail, says at least 26 people were killed during the attack, including civilians. He says 19 others were injured and were airlifted to Khartoum for treatment. A three-day curfew has been declared in Kadugli town and other localities in order to prevent further escalation of violence in the area. Speaking to media on Wednesday in Khartoum, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known locally as Himeti, a member of the Sudan Sovereign Council, calls the incident politically motivated. He accuses certain unnamed individuals of trying to create insecurity by fueling tribal conflict among locals and pitting his forces against the Sudan Armed Forces for political gain. Speaking in Arabic, General Dagalo, who heads the RSF, warns politicians against instigating violence among Sudanese citizens.
Any politician who might have a plan to reach to any position should do that without harming the country. Currently, people are trying to survive the global pandemic, and many don't have food to eat, and at the same time, others are instigating violence.
General Dagalo says a committee has been formed to investigate the matter, although Dagalo did not state clearly that the attackers were from Sudan Armed Forces soldiers. He says the transitional government has agreed to set up a court-martial to try the perpetrators within weeks in the court of law.
We have agreed to form a joint court-martial that shall be announced soon. We need the entire Sudanese people to know about this process, and there is a need to maintain close monitoring. We need people to benefit from the current political change in the country. they should refrain from violence and seduction.
Dagalo warns politicians against inciting tribal divisions among the organized forces. He says the government won't allow tribalism in the army because it wants the military institutions to act as a symbol of nationalism in the country. He says any member of the organized forces found inciting tribal divisions will be punished.
As rapid support forces or police forces, we don't have any problem with anyone. We just need everyone to behave responsibly towards this country. All our organized forces should refrain from tribalism. They should all adhere to the oath and vows they took at their graduation and be responsible citizens.
Last week, authorities in South Darfur State reported nearly 30 people from the Falata and Rizegat tribes were killed. Another intercommunal conflict erupted over the weekend between Beni Amire and Nuba in Sudan's eastern town of Kassala, which left more than 10 people dead and dozens of others injured. General Dagalo vows to stamp out intercommunal conflicts, but urges Sudanese citizens to cooperate with the government. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The World Meteorological Organization says many parts of the world can expect warmer than average temperatures from May through June, mainly due to human-induced climate change. The WMO has just released its Global Seasonal Climate Update. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Climate scientists expect above normal temperatures over the next 3 months, despite the absence of an El Niño, a natural phenomenon that tends to boost global temperatures. In past years, record heat has occurred in El Niño years, but that is changing. The World Meteorological Organization says that April 2020, a non-El Niño period, is tied as the warmest month on record with April 2016, when there was a strong El Niño as well as climate change. WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says all the years subsequent to 2016 have been very warm without El Niño, including 2019, which was the second warmest year on record. She notes the trend has continued into this year.
Global temperatures in January, February, and March were also the warmest or the second warmest year on record, according to international databases. So we're seeing now that, you know, the human influence on our climate is actually stronger. It's more powerful than, you know, natural forces of nature such as El Niño.
The WMO says most extreme weather events are happening against the backdrop of climate change. It says heat waves are increasing due to climate change, and that is having a major impact on extreme events such as tropical cyclones and heavy rainfall. East Africa, for example, is experiencing record rainfall and flooding. Nullis tells VOA that preparing for and managing the impact of extreme weather events is becoming more difficult due to COVID-19. She explains that nations are not paying enough attention to early warning systems because of the pandemic.
You know, we really do need strong multi-hazard early warning systems against hurricanes, against heat waves, because these things are all interlinked. They have a cascading effect, and COVID now is one of those hazards.
WMO scientists say the COVID-19 pandemic, more than ever before, increases the need for reliable weather forecasts and longer-term climate outlooks. They say temperatures and precipitation have a major impact on key economic and public health systems, noting that many have been brought to the brink of collapse by the pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Unidentified gunmen killed nearly 30 people in an attack on a Rapid Support Forces, or RFS, base outside Kadugli town in South Kordofan State. The paramilitary group's leader condemned the Monday attack. The military caretaker governor of the state says at least 26 people were killed, including civilians. He says 19 others were injured and airlifted to Khartoum. A three-day curfew has been declared in Kadugli and other nearby areas to prevent more violence. Sovereign Council member General Hamdan Dagalo, who heads the RFS, accuses certain individuals of trying to create insecurity by instigating tribal conflict among locals and pitting forces against the Sudan Armed Forces for political gain. Some South Sudanese believe the government is making up coronavirus test results to get donations from the international community, but South Sudan health officials say the testing kits and the PCR machine are of international standards quality and produce accurate results. Dr. Bior Kouer Bior, a senior consultant at the National Public Health Laboratory, the facility where the tests are being conducted, says the machines used in Kenya, Uganda, and all over the world are the same ones being used in Juba. Dr. Bior says technicians working at the laboratory are qualified and experienced in conducting Ebola, influenza, and other viral diseases, including COVID-19 tests. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
George Boyd, yeah, the one George Boyd, yeah, the one George Boyd.